folks, and welcome back. Once again, it is a Friday morning. Yes, it's been a holiday-shortened week, but there's still plenty of stuff to talk about. And more than that, we have everybody back online. I got Tim Kern here, a little bit east of me, and at least relative to Jeff, who is a whole heck of a lot further south. And, you know, guys, we had a major internet outage earlier that affected a huge part of the nation. The headline says, Nationwide CenturyLink Outage. Outage affects Colorado. That was from the Denver channel and local stuff. But I was beginning to wonder if the satellite was going to come back up, because about 95% of all the websites that I was trying to get to were down. Fortunately, we have another way to get in via 4G, and that was not quite as badly affected. But looks like we're all here. So let me say good morning to Jeff first. How are you doing, Jeff?
I'm doing great. I'm a little bored, though, just because one of my favorite TV websites has been attacked by ISIS for the last day and a half. That was the BBC. And yeah, they've been down. They were down all day yesterday. And
right there in London, Stan, it's probably easy for them.
Well, yeah. Oh, and well, I'll wait till it's we start getting into the news. But yeah, they've got a lot of gun problems coming up there.
That's what the good gun bans are for, to make sure that the only people that have them are the ones that are really, really going to cause the problem. So it's been real effective that way. Good morning, Tim.
Locks keep honest people honest.
Good. Yes, honest people honest. That would be nice. The problem is we have fewer and fewer honest people.
Yeah.
And it kind of scares me now and then.
It should.
Yeah, good morning. I've been watching the big clamor over the Fed and how Trump blames the recent Dow decline on the Fed, which of course is totally reasonable. The Fed hasn't been this high. The Fed funds rate hasn't been this high since, let me look here, right about
10 years.
Oh, September of 2008. Unbelievable. Who'd have thought?
Well, you know, he's right to the extent that they basically not only cut the last guy a whole lot of slack, they built up the biggest debt bubble in history and the biggest bailout in history, too. It actually started back in 2000, but it went bonkers in 2007, 2008, 2009. So this was inevitable. I do think that what's interesting here, Tim, we talked a little bit last week about the politics. And to the extent that Trump, I think all of us agree, made a huge mistake by stepping up and taking credit for the stock market bubble, which was bound to collapse, is at least politically making the right move here by pinning the blame on the Fed, who was trying to stick it on him.
Well, if you may recall, back in January, just prior to the State of the Union message, he said the stock markets have gone wild and they're so high, he said, perhaps too high. He gave us that hint back in January. And,
okay. Well, of course, Alan Greenspan talked about irrational exuberance, too, but he didn't do anything to stop it until afterwards when he said, well, you can only recognize a bubble in hindsight.
Well, that's not true. You can see it building, too.
Well, if you're in the Fed, you can't see it and then until it's in hindsight. The rest of us have a better ability to look.
Well, the trend of the stock market, of course, has a lot to do with the Fed funds rate. But the level is much more tightly correlated to the national debt. And we are currently in a spot where the national debt and the Dow, at least, are coming into congruence. It's been way too high. The Dow has been way too high considering the national debt. If you take a look back all the way back to the time of Ronald Reagan, when we first hit our first $1 trillion debt, we also hit our first 1,000 Dow. And if you go into Clinton's time, when we were at about $5.5 trillion in debt, and the Dow was at about 5,500. That made sense. And when Obama took over, and throughout Obama's reign, as we climbed to 20, 21, almost $22 trillion in debt, the Dow followed suit. But when Trump took over and people saw, you know, people had some hope, the Dow took off and it exceeded that benchmark. Now that the Democrats are going to be holding the purse strings, running the House, The Dow is coming back down to where it's where my little theory says it should be.
Well, you
I've
can almost
past.
Yeah, we talked about that a little bit last week.
Prominent economists, and they went, "Ha, remarkable, ain't it?"
Yeah, but you could almost call it hopium withdrawal, Tim, to that extent. It got a little bit ahead of itself, and now it's backing off. Now, as let me throw out a kind of a question here, partly rhetorical, but go ahead. I know there's a lot of meat in what's been going on of late. One thing we have certainly seen is incredible increasing levels of volatility. We had a huge number of basically 500 or so point down days, great and tremendous even intraday swings. Then about 2 days ago, day after Christmas or so, we had the biggest single point Dow Industrial Average gain, single point gain, not necessarily percentage-wise, ever. It was up over 1,000 points. Then it was down the next day a lot, and it's been all over the place. Some are saying the volatility, of course, is the real indicator here. And finally, there was this, and I'll throw it out. I talked about it on the news, kind of get your comments. Two things have been discussed going into this year-end time frame for a long time. One has to do with redemptions from things like various pension funds and IRAs and 401ks and the like, where people are required to give huge amounts of notice, 45 days or more notice. So there was some date certain back month and a half ago, essentially, that said, look, come year-end, if people want to get their money out, they've already given notice. So at least the potential was there for some huge cash crunches to happen. And then there was this from Zero Hedge. They called it the biggest massive buy order ever, $64 billion out of bonds and into stocks in the various pension funds. And this was primarily Wells Fargo that had made this observation. But that was in large part, along, of course, with the plunge protection team, responsible for the huge single-day rally.
Well, you've put about 10 things on the table.
That's because there always are a whole bunch of things on the table. There's never a single factor unless it's just the pin that pops the bubble.
Absolutely. But you're talking about volatility, which is directly concerned with uncertainty in the very short run, driven by, of course, program trading.
You betcha, that
you
too.
It's the whole idea, if Warren Buffett buys this stock, I'm buying this stock. You know, if Warren Buffett has pancakes for breakfast, I'm having pancakes for breakfast. Then everybody has pancakes. Then there's a shortage of pancakes. The price of pancakes goes up, and it's self-fulfilling. And we have to watch out that we don't, fundamentals don't mean anything anymore in the stock market. Nobody's in a given stock for the long term.
Well, there's no such thing as price discovery, even, one could argue.
Well, that's the whole problem. We are simply we're simply throwing darts in the dark. And when the big guys move, we have to move, or we're wiped out. And the problem with that, of course, is that the big guys don't know where they're going either.
Yeah.
The only things that are going to give you long-term smoothed results are what I was talking about earlier. When you look at the national debt, when you look at the Fed funds rate, you look at things like that, and those do drive it. But individual stocks, fundamentals those are so 20th century.
Okay. Well, you know, one other quick thing. You brought it up. Did you see the Wall Street Journal article the other day? There were some interesting comments from one of my favorite sites, Zero Hedge, which said, wow, we've been talking about program trading and the dangers and the exposures and all the evils there for years, and it's amazing to see that the Wall Street Journal seems to have finally figured it out.
Well, you can't keep a lid on it forever. You
know? Eventually, the big boys begin to realize, maybe we better pretend that we didn't see this no more and let folks realize, we've known about this all along, but now
it's
time to
admit it. Well, the emperor's been walking around a long time wearing no clothes, but, you know, now it's winter.
Yeah.
And, somebody's going to have to figure this out.
Did you guys see – I saw a cartoon just the other day. And it was they were showing Trump the wall, and he's like, I don't see the wall. They're like, it's there, you just can't see it. you know, it's high tech and blah, 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 blah. And by the time it's done, he's like, oh my goodness, this is the best wall ever. You know, and it was a play on The Emperor Has No Clothes.
Okay. Well, the Emperor does have an invasion.
And is so true. And, you know, if the president can't see it, it's really unlikely that the people south of the border can't see it either.
Well, it's funny, isn't it? Because they're being told there's a wall there, you can't see it. But they're also being told by various federal judges, come on in. If you can just get across the border, you've got it made. And then you can apply for asylum, whether the president thinks he's the president or not.
Well, I still think that we ought to activate the death ray and just call it even.
Yeah.
There'll be ashes all down the, up and down the border, little spots of ashes.
Well, I don't know if you heard me say this or not, Tim, but I suspect the 5G network is already in place. They're putting it in place in major cities, right there where you're at in Indianapolis. And all they need to do is just crank up the power. It's already available. But I have a suspicion they're not going to use the death ray yet, because if they figured it out, a lot of people might say, hey, I don't want that 5G on my block.
Now, I understand the tongue-in-cheek that's been going on, but just as a point, I think some people actually believe it. I would rather not indiscriminately just kill people just because I don't want them to come into my house. If somebody's coming in that's going to harm me, well, that's different. But if they're just coming in because they're trying to escape the elements or something like that, boy, I don't know. At some point, there has to be some humanity into this argument.
Let me say it this way, Jeff. If it's your house, somebody breaks into your house at 4 in the morning and you don't want to shoot them, that's entirely up to you. But on the other hand, for those of us that say, I don't know if somebody breaks down my door at 4 in the morning, whether he just wants to, you know, rape my daughter, steal my TV, or kill everybody inside and eat the bones. So the scripture and the one we used to have law said, you don't have to wait to find out. And given that people have been told, you're not supposed to come across the border. The presumption is, especially if they're carrying flags from nations that they're allegedly fleeing from in terror, that there's somebody telling a whopper here.
Keep in mind, your example is analogous to what we're dealing with here, but I don't disagree with what you're saying at the point of your house. In a nation, you know, just dropping them dead because they're trying to cross the border. You know, I'm only addressing the tongue in cheek, just so that the audience doesn't assume that we're all on the same page of saying we should kill anybody trying to come in who doesn't come in legally, because that's just
let's get back to the tongue in cheek. The death ray, and Tim uses the term correctly, because 5G, I believe, as an engineer who's looked at millimeter wavelength technologies, will in fact kill a whole lot of people eventually. It'll just do so very slowly. And the reason why we're making the tongue-in-cheek joke about the death ray is because the way that it's being used now, and I think people know this, but just in case they haven't heard it, it's important. What they call the active denial systems that the military has deployed for, again, military applications, crowd control applications. They have a millimeter wavelength beam. It runs at 95 gigahertz, which is in the 5G spectrum, and it's in the same wavelength band as things that are already being deployed. That is used to cause intense physical pain. It literally makes people think they're burning alive. Doesn't actually burn the skin until they run the power up a bit more, but it certainly activates the pain sensors. And the joke here is that the reason why I don't think they will use that weapon is because it would tip people off on the fact that the real death ray, Jeff, isn't going to be just deployed upon the border. That's not the point. They are intending to kill people in their homes, and that really irritates me. So there's no funny humor buried deep within this. Tim, you had a comment,
sure,
too,
I
know.
Yeah, go ahead, Tim.
Well, I did, and I think, Jeff, I think the best thing to do is to put up a sign that says, if you want to come in, go to Jeff's house. Because what we're saying is that, you know, Jeff, and you said it earlier, Jeff, you can have anybody come into your house that you want, but you can't pass a law that says they can come into my house.
Right.
And
no question.
This is the problem we have when everybody talks about, oh, the humanity. We have embassies and consulates all over. We have consulates all over Mexico where they can go and they can say, oh, I need humanitarian aid. And that's what they need to do. And if they don't go there, if they don't go to the port of entry, If they don't go get their paperwork, if they don't go make the case there, they can't do it simply by stepping over the river or walking into California.
No question.
The point then is, here's somebody who's already a criminal, has committed a criminal act, and obviously doesn't care about committing a criminal act, and is being coached on how to commit a better criminal act, and they're coming in. So I don't want criminals coming in. I want people who are legit coming in. So this whole idea about humanity is a bunch of hooey.
Well, no, keep in mind that there has to be some lines there. I mean, just the idea of somebody who crosses the line, now they're a criminal. I mean, how many times have you been deer hunting and you crossed over into somebody's property by accident? It wasn't on purpose. Or you needed to cross over because you were trying to get to another place and you were just crossing over for a short term. There's all kind of different.
Jeff, the law says if it's posted no hunting, keep out, and you cross anyway, you've committed a crime. So if there's a border that says posted, keep out.
That's all you want. Yeah.
Now,
exactly. You want a fence. You put a fence around your property, and then people don't come in. And if they do come in, they've broken the law.
I agree. And I'm not disagreeing with the idea that we need to have a closed border for this purpose. No question whatsoever.
Well,
all I'm saying.
Good enough.
All I'm saying.
Okay, good enough. Yeah,
all I'm saying is that when we get to the point to where people should die because they cross the border, that's something that I think that we need to pull back on.
Well, people
let's
need
talk
to die.
About that. Let's talk
if it's an invasion.
Let's talk about that a little bit.
Go ahead, Tim.
Well, let's talk about it a little. Every law has the power of the death penalty.
You got it.
Every law can send you to prison. Every law, and if you try to get out of prison, whether you're armed or not, whether your intentions are good or not, if you try to get out of prison, you can get shot. And the point is that every law we have has the force of death behind it. And this is one of the reasons why I keep saying we have way too many laws. On the other hand, every law has that because that is the ultimate way of enforcing it. And you say, well, they shouldn't get shot just for coming across the border. How do you know? Why shouldn't they get shot just for coming across the border? And if they know they will, why in the heck would they then scale a wall and risk getting shot? And now that hunting season is over, I think all the hunters might just go down there and help the National Park Service, INS, and the Border Patrol.
To add to your point, Tim, if essentially somebody has committed the non-crime of continuing to decide that their property yesterday, let's say a 10-round magazine, is all of a sudden made illegal, and as we've already seen in Maryland, they killed a fellow there for a bogus, unconstitutional non-law that they call a red flag law. So, again, it irritates me a little bit that people are also concerned about how dare we tell people that the border is actually a real border. But on the other hand, your property isn't your real property. And if we declare that it's all of a sudden slaves aren't allowed to have this, as Tim points out, it carries the death penalty. We will go to door to door, we will take those things from you, and we will kill you if necessary to take what you thought was your property away from you. So all of this is, in fact, more serious.
If you run too many stop signs and you try to get out of jail, they'll shoot you doing that.
You bet.
For running stop signs.
I understand what you guys are saying, and I do understand at some point when left unchallenged, ad absurdum becomes the norm.
No, ad absurdum is not just the norm. Ad absurdum is the law, Jeff. This is a matter of life and death.
Okay. Right, but remember, my comment isn't about our regular daily laws. You know, we break, 4 or 5 or 6 federal laws every day, every single one of us. At some point, yes, I agree with Tim, we have too many damn laws. But what I'm talking about is that we should have a hard border. It should be a closed border. If somebody climbs the fence, they should be put into a place to hold them, to detain them, to find out why it is they wanted to climb the wall. If they are in,
Why not shoot them? Seriously, they're coming over the wall.
Why not just get a big old catapult and fling them back over the wall?
Okay.
We don't care why they're coming in. They're coming in when they shouldn't be, where they shouldn't be. And we don't care why that is.
There are plenty of options for them to come lawfully.
And I understand that.
All we care about is that they're doing this.
I understand the sentiment. I truly do. And I do understand the desire to have a strong deterrent mentally for them to not want to scale the wall. I agree.
Okay, what would you suggest? What would you suggest would work?
What would I suggest
would work? Asking them why they want to come in?
A hard border, a solid border, a border that they cannot.
Yeah, and then they bring Chuck Schumer's 12-foot ladder to climb a 10-foot wall, and then what do you do? Maybe you don't catch them in the first place.
Let me throw an article out here, guys.
The effectiveness of the wall.
Here's something from this week, Jeff, that will help make the point. The DailyMail.com says. Let me finish this.
Mark, hang on a second. I understand what you're saying, Tim, and I have no problem with it. All I'm saying is I don't think death should be the first knee-jerk response. All I'm saying.
It's not even the 15th, okay? Here's the column from the Daily Mail. This is this week, just to make the point, Jeff. It's reducto ad absurdum, and we're past it. This is, again, from a leftist paper in the U.K.
And we're past it.
It's enormous flow. Says the CBP commissioner on CBS this morning, on Wednesday morning. This is the commissioner of Customs and Border Patrol saying that given that there were two children that have died and gotten high-profile coverage in the last week or two, one on Christmas Eve, an 8-year-old, there are now huge flows of migrants bringing children across the border at unprecedented rates, and most of them are sick. So they're literally saying, hey, look, those kids died, and let's see if we can't bring all of our sick kids across. So migrants with kids are flooding the border at unprecedented rates. Customs and Border Patrol says they have processed, are you sitting down, nearly 25,000 children by the end of December. And furthermore, he notes that we can't handle that. Our stations were built for 30 or 40 years ago for single adult males. We clearly are way, way out of the league here. Now, here's the line that I think was so interesting. We've got an enormous flow, different than we've ever seen before. And all of this is fueled by a huge surge in illegal immigration from Central America with the recent formation of commercial bus services. He puts commercial in, it's free to those that are riding them. Commercial bus services operated by various criminal cartels, which transport migrants to the U.S. border from their home countries in just a matter of a few days. This is, by any measure, an invasion.
We also now have smallpox in the U.S. for the first time in decades.
Tuberculosis?
We've got... Well, yeah, but we hadn't eradicated that.
Yeah, true. We just
almost
got more.
But we now we've got smallpox. Isn't that great? The other thing that's happening, of course, once again, why would cartels pay for families with children to come in unless they're camouflaging their own buddies?
Exactly.
What's in these buses? Who takes these buses apart at the border? How much crud can you put into a bus and hide if it's allegedly a bunch of screaming kids?
These are all valid points. No question whatsoever. These are all valid points. But listen, I don't know how many of you guys that are listening and whether or not you guys hear how long you have spent outside of the country. Yeah, keep me on the time, Mark.
10 seconds. But, we got time for the music to come up, basically, Jeff.
Okay. Well, I'll pick it up on the other side. But living outside of the U.S. for as long as I have, you get to see some things that most people in the States just don't have quite an understanding of.
And flying in and out across the border in a small plane, you get to see a lot of that, too. And some of us have watched this degradation for years, and it's not been a good thing.
Right.
And we got the music.
We'll talk about it on the other side of the break, guys. Hope you're enjoying our discussion.
I am.
welcome back. Welcome back. Welcome back, everybody. The second half of Drive Time Friday with your host, Mark Call, and myself, Jeff Gilbert. And with us again today, Tim Kern. Okay, so we're going to end this part of the discussion relatively quickly, but I wanted to continue the idea relatively quickly. Again, is relative to whomever.
Okay, yeah, that's what I was thinking, yeah. But that's cool.
The idea, so Tim asked on the other side, what would be a solution? This is just a solution that I have in my head, whether or not it would actually work or not, who knows, or how much detail is missing, who knows. But we have all kind of bases all over the world that we're spending tons and tons of money to keep open, and in some cases, against the wishes of the people of those countries, bring them home, put them on the borders. They give them something to do. You know, all the aviation fuel and expenditures for all the military machinery, put it on the border, make it work.
Well, Tim, just interestingly, some suggest that that might be, in fact, part of what's happening with the withdrawal from Syria.
May very well be. And these kind of things, hey, close the border. Make them come through established entrance points. Nothing wrong with that. But if somebody does try to cross the border, and, you know, it's women and children, you know, things like that, you know, then... For me personally, those people go into detention until we can find out what's going on, and we put them either in the society because, hey, you come into the United States through non-allowable entrance points or processes, and you skip the standard process of entry into the United States, then you have now negated your ability to have any access to social benefits within the country, and that includes medicine. Now, that doesn't mean that communities can't have something for that, but as far as federal social dollars and state social dollars, they only go to people who come into the country correctly. I think that would address a lot of the problems. Now, we have a problem with sickness, new things that come in that we've already gotten rid of in the states, but now they're coming in because the countries where they're from, they don't. And it really sucks to be born in a country that doesn't have the same type of health care and things like that as the United States. Isn't it great to be lucky enough to be born in the United States? But these people who were born in like Guatemala or even like in Venezuela or whatever, these people, life isn't all
or
that
California.
Great. Or California. These people want to get out. Some of them really just want to get out and escape the life they have and try to start a new life. Some of them are bad people. Some of them are just trying to make a better life. I think we should find out which one is which before we start shooting.
I think, first of all, you know, when you're talking women and children, you're looking at the 20% versus the 80%, which are military age young men. That's one piece that's the people tend to focus on the exceptions rather than the vast majority.
Well, some of that's
by
design, too.
There's a whole lot better way. Now, they say they're trying to escape, I don't know, Guatemala, pick one. They did escape Guatemala. They're in Mexico. Cool. They've escaped Guatemala. Bingo. They're already gone. And they speak Spanish, and they're already there. That's cool. Let them stay there. Now, this is where I came up with my idea. You have a defensible border wall. You don't let them cross the wall, then detain them, then ask them a bunch of questions, send them off for a court date, and never see them again, like we do now. We send them right back through the wall the other way and say, get your paperwork in order till you come back. You come back again, we shoot you. That's simple enough. Or if you really are concerned about the humanity and all that kind of stuff, we set up points inside of Mexico where they get medical care and they can fill out the paperwork and they can do all that in Mexico.
Beautiful.
Then nobody illegal comes through the wall.
Yeah, beautiful.
All right.
Wonderful.
I don't know why we can't do that. And it would be cheaper than fixing them up here. You employ a whole bunch of Mexican doctors and take care of it in Mexico.
And
Mexico
finally,
Mexico gave them transit.
Finally,
so
one more.
Then
one
they
more
don't,
thing.
Then they don't come over the wall. And if they do, they're really in trouble this time. We don't set them free and give them a court date next August. You'll never see them again. You know that.
Yep. One more thing that's not going to happen, and primarily for reasons that are obvious, but back when we didn't have this problem, we also didn't have a welfare grid that essentially said, don't bring us your huddled masses yearning to breathe free. Bring us those who want to be made give free stuff to. Okay. In one case, you had all kinds of people coming through Ellis Island who said, look, I want to work hard. I want to give my kids a better life than I had. I believe in the American dream, which used to be, I'll work and I'll be paid for my work. And, if I save and build, I can make a better life for myself as opposed to, all this free stuff.
I want to be an American. I don't want to be, I want to be an American and I'm not going to ask for ballots in my language.
You bet. And that, of course, they used to actually have to require, that was a condition of entry, if you remember. People would say, I know that when I come in here, I'm not gonna have, the welfare state ever. It was one of the conditions of entry. And, sadly, that, is no longer the case. And as Tim pointed out during the break, you've got California to deal with, and they obviously are doing exactly the opposite, and that's why we're getting a, let's just be real here, a crop of people who are not the same as those that once came in through Ellis Island with an entirely different motivation.
Right. Now, my family, part of my family, came through Ellis Island. My name, Gilbert, wasn't Gilbert when we came through Ellis Island. It was something else. But we came here to seek a new life. We were escaping at this particular juncture of my family. It was we were escaping the Bolshevik-Menshevik war, revolution. So we're here. We came through established mechanisms, and now through many generations, we have benefited the economy and benefited society as a whole. That's something that we want even people who come in today to do. However, other things are making that difficult. You guys know we have... You know, we have Newspeak that is now becoming mandated, and these things are changing society and upsetting society and allowing for us to have, you know, arguments where people should have, you know, where people would argue that we should have a completely open border because of, you know, we are humans first. And, you know, that kind of mentality will change the United States into something completely different within a generation. So what we're talking about with the solid border is to basically maintain the American society for several generations more, just to try to slow down what inevitably is coming, because what's happening in Europe is what's eventually going to happen all over the whole world, and that is a complete mixing of all nationalities and borders becoming, you know, no longer a soft border. By the way, so as a segment talking about Europe, Germany now can conscript, actually they're trying to put this into force, conscript any one of their EU partners. No good reason for the Brexit. But anyhow, go ahead.
Well, once again, there's about 10 things on the table. Kern is not my grandfather's name. And when he came here, it was Kaiser. And the Lusitania had just been torpedoed.
Oof,
and he was from Austria. Well, he was from Austria, and he tried to explain that. He says, I'm not German. I'm an Austrian. And, of course, the guy at Ellis Island said, Americans don't know the difference.
yeah, this is for your benefit.
Don't be a Kaiser. You'll starve to death. You know, don't do this. And he wanted to become, and he did become, a you know, what we'd call a real American with real American values. Learned English right away, did the best he could, took one job after another, and ended up being a vice president at a dairy where he was working. And that all worked out. He sent my dad to law school, and my dad ended up having me, but, you know, it doesn't last forever.
Karma's a thing.
Look at these things, and you say that what's happening in Europe will happen here. No, not if we don't make the same mistakes that Europe made.
Right.
That's the whole point. Europe constantly makes mistakes that we want to emulate. No, we should take their mistakes and say we don't want to do those mistakes. We don't want this problem.
And hard border is that answer.
Well,
because those countries in Europe that have a hard border have less problems.
Time for a bit of conspiracy theory here, guys. I will contend, Tim, since you're on that topic, that the idea is not to avoid the mistakes of Europe. The idea is to use what's being done in Europe as a beta test to say, okay, here's how we immolated the entire northern European continent with Muslim immigration and destroyed the fabric of that society. What can we do better? Because there are a few people, even in Sweden, where they're waking up to it. And rather than not doing it, what they're doing is saying, okay, well, we need to have a California plan that we're going to implement in the United States. So again, I'm just
great
sarcastic enough to say
version three.
This is being done on purpose.
The key needs to be assimilation, not merely the entrance, not merely the allowance of ghettos to be put together in the U.S.
Right.
And by
best
ghetto, I don't mean like
not
a
assimilation. Exactly.
You've got to have assimilation. And all we're having now is invasion.
Right.
And as you point out, these folks, they want to come into this country, and then they want all the signs in Spanish. They want the ballots in Spanish. You know, there's places I went in Florida where, you know, if you didn't speak Spanish, you couldn't get around. And I learned a little bit. I learned how to get around. But the point is assimilation. We have to do some of that. Part of the, you know, official English crowd, part of that recognizes that. It would sure as heck help
if we had an official language
in this country.
We got a people and now that in fact infest Congress that pretend they do not know what words like shall not be infringed mean. Or Congress shall make no law. And I know it sounds somewhat sarcastic, but it's true. Until we have a language that actually means what it says on paper, and doesn't mean whatever the word is today, we are going to continue to see some really nasty problems.
Well, listen, you know, very good points. And I live in a Spanish country. When I came down here, I knew how to say beer, bathroom, and how you doing. And that was it.
Right.
And over, the last 8+ years, I can now communicate very effectively. And in my mind, I did that because when I was in the States, the thing that I hated and the things that people around me hated the most or complained about the most was people coming into their community, wherever they happen to be, and never learning to become one of the community. Here and
correct.
the American mindset is that's how we feel at home, but we come down, like in this case, I come down to Costa Rica, and more than half of the Americans down here never learn how to assimilate into the community. They have their little compound they live on, and whenever they come into town, they have to go places that speaks English because otherwise they won't be able to do anything. To me, I think that's
how do the locals appreciate that? How much do they like it?
Well, I can tell you this, that when you're rich and you won't assimilate, you're going to pay more than those who are poor, like me, who do assimilate. Because when I go in, I'm treated as a Tico. I'm treated as one of
the locals,
even though I'm one of the beefier Ticos they've ever seen, and I'm one of the whiter ones. But, they literally treat me as a brother. And that's because I assimilated.
Sure.
I became one of them. And that's all we ask in
absolutely.
The States. That's all we ask here. But again, the double standard of the American mentality, because 80+% of the Americans down here do not assimilate. Even though back home they would be bitching, they would be complaining about them not coming into their community and not assimilating there.
Well, here's where I say, you know, I'm gonna play devil's advocate, to use that probably not appropriate terminology. But look at California. I mean, seriously, Jeff, based on what you just finished saying, California is assimilating to the entire communist world. They are assimilating to Venezuela. Isn't that cool?
Yeah, and they're going
and they're
that
proud
way
of
financially,
it.
Too. Now, oh, by the way, just a real quick change of scenery. I've been following a lot of the activity going on within the Pacific Ring, the Ring of Fire, volcanic activity, earthquake activity, and just watching the flow of energy going across. And during one of the videos I was watching on Dutch Sense, he happened to do a topology review of Los Angeles, because there's, depending on what happens over the next couple of days, there could be a pretty big earthquake in that region. Not necessarily in the next couple of days, but likely depending on how things flow. Anyhow, the entire city of Los Angeles is within tsunami destruction range. The entire city. The entire city. One good tsunami coming in from the right angle, literally the entire city will become underwater in a matter of seconds.
Well, you know, Jeff, we talked about this actually.
Hope.
We talked about this a couple of months ago, to the extent that when Kilauea was big in the news, and there was an issue of an underwater shelf there that might literally cleave and drop into the ocean. That is precisely what happened. I believe it was Christmas Eve with Anak Krakatoa, where the big tsunami wasn't caused by the volcano directly. It was caused by the volcano knocking off a shelf that was underwater that produced a first tsunami. Now there's talk about maybe a second one, killed 400 plus people. But in the case of Hawaii, what was going to happen was that the tsunami from Hawaii would literally reach the coast, and not just L.A., but all the way from essentially Oregon down into the Baja and southern Mexico, and could cause a tsunami. They'd have 6 hours of warning. And that ain't enough to get many people out of an area with that many millions upon millions, where freeways are more like molasses in a normal day.
Yeah,
well, they just had an earthquake. They just had a serious earthquake on Sicily. Mount Etna was acting up again.
Oh, yeah.
And just a couple of days ago, and it knocked down a whole bunch of buildings because they didn't have earthquake building codes, in the 15th century. Nobody was killed, according to my friend on Sicily. She said, but there's an awful lot of rubble and an awful lot of damage that we never even hear of in the U.S. media. Of course, the Earth is always doing something, and you'd think people would learn over the course of millennia.
Entire crust sits upon a molten lake of lava. I mean, so it's always in motion. You know, if you ever watch ice on a pond, I mean, we're doing the same thing. You push on one edge of it, the other end is going to move. Dutch Sense, if nobody's ever watched that, you should watch Dutch Sense on YouTube. The guy really does an incredible job working through the flow of energy through the tectonic plates.
All right.
Yep.
Okay, well, let's talk about a couple of other things. I've got one more story I want to throw into the mix here, completely different topic, but before we get there, because there is so much of all of the things that we're talking about that kind of go together. Remember when we had the first attempt after the election at major election rigging? I guess you could say this was a beta test for what they managed to pull off successfully. In California particularly, tried it in Florida, but the woman there was just plain too stupid to get away with it. They managed it evidently in Arizona and in Minnesota and some other places. But the idea was to rig an election. Okay, and here is the story out of Alabama. Now it can be told because it's too late. Let me do it this in order. LinkedIn co-founder funded Democrats' Russia, Russia, Russia smear campaign against Judge Roy Moore, the Ten Commandments, and actually constitutionalist judge down in Alabama. Facebook allowed it, was the story that came out earlier in the week. They ran a democratically organized smear campaign against Judge Roy Moore, ramped up what Russia did by 1,000. Basically, it talks about how much money Russia, Russia, Russia actually did spend, all right? $6,000. That's not with millions or billions. That's $6,000 in the last 6 weeks of the Russian, of the election campaign, and only $4,600 with Google in total. But they multiplied that by 1,000 in just one state to undermine Judge Roy Moore. And basically what they did was they spent a bunch of money, they claimed it was Russian bots, and they tried to get Republicans who would otherwise have voted for Roy Moore to believe the Russians were doing this and to write in somebody else. So that, another Republican, just enough to make sure that the election was tilted. Well, that worked. And now what we have today, this is the funny news, Facebook has finally suspended several accounts connected, not with any of the Republicans, constitutionalists, you name it, some Democrats, operatives who orchestrated the campaign to fool Alabama voters into thinking Russian bots were promoting Republican Roy Moore. And this is after thousands of Twitter accounts posing as Russian bots smeared Moore successfully. So here Russia has didn't do it, but the Democrats did. Facebook allowed it, and now that it's way too late, and the WAPO and New York Post and New York Times and all the other leftist publications picked up on it, Facebook has finally said, well, now we're going to suspend those folks. Aren't they wonderful?
Well, justice takes time.
Yeah, that's true. And you can't count on it actually happening before it was. They got away with it. And so what's going to happen? Well, we're going to give the little slap on the wrist. Yeah. But we need to be aware of it. Okay. At least we're aware of it. And, people need to be saying to Facebook and others, you know what? I don't think I trust you anymore. And we have perfectly good reasons not to.
We shouldn't.
Fool me 37 times.
Well, they gave access to so many different companies as part of their, you know, notifications. So whenever you give someone access to send you notifications, a website or something like that, all that stuff gets shared. And Facebook was doing the same thing, but saying they weren't. Apple is doing the exact same thing. More than 25,000 government requests to Apple in order to access someone's iPhone were accepted. Okay, go ahead. No problem. Do what you need.
What happens to Facebook if they don't?
Well, then they go under. But,
well, their business model fails.
There
you
go. So what is this really about? Not Facebook. It's about government coercion once again. Of course it is.
Well, it's about money. I mean, you know, if they go against the government, then they have a harder time making money, and then their investors are harmed, and then they can sue. So now they're legally bound, just like with us with bases in other countries. In some cases, we can't leave because we're legally bound to be there because of previous engagements or treaties. We basically are so litigious, and we're so unbelievably wound up in the entire web of this economy, that whenever the economy starts to fall apart, every single relationship, every single covenant agreement between countries is going to be at risk, and it's not going to be pretty.
So brace yourselves, because basically it's a mathematical certainty and an inevitability. It has been for some time, but more and more folks are simply waking up to it. Same old story, I guess, guys. So Facebook has been lying to people and rigging them. Google is listening to people's phones. Who could have thought it? Alexa can listen whether you think she's on or not. And hardy har.
Oh, yeah.
And the
and
more
she
people
call the cops on you.
Yeah, well, or your parrot, if you've got a smart one, can order all kinds of stuff for you. That's less harmless, more harmless than what's really going on. And here's this one. I'll throw this out as we wait for the music, practically. Venezuelans shudder. Now, you'd think they'd have been shuddering already. But now Reuters revealed as of last month that the Venezuelan government had contracted with big Chinese socialist company ZTE to develop a socialist credit score for them and a national biometric ID. And even in Venezuela, who knows? Maybe if it gets that bad in Venezuela, perhaps eventually even some Californians will wake up. And they're saying the public is asking, is this a good thing? We're not sure if this is a good thing. Hey, how much worse can it get?
How do you get a socialist credit score? Explain that, please.
Oh, you mean this? They call it the social credit score. But the way it works in China is say, are you a good little socialist? Are you a good party member? Are you saying the right
things?
Do you have the right friends?
Are you a useless eater?
Yes, and if you're a good little socialist, you get a high socialist credit score. And if you're not, you can't rent a car, you can't have a hotel, you certainly aren't going to get a job, and you probably won't get an apartment or a phone.
Well, here we call it politically correct, and there they call it something else. You have a lot of trouble. I mean, look at any Hollywood actor that is on the wrong side of political correctness.
You'll never work in this town again.
Oh, yeah.
That's right. And it happens all the time.
Don't plant your roots in a metropolitan city. Stay out of the metropolitans, and you'll be able to avoid this as long as possible.
Well, come out while you can.
It's easy to do. Stay off those little blue dots on the map.
And be aware of what's coming, because it just seems like every week, guys, we talk about how far gone things already are, and about the time you think, oh, can it really get any faster? Yep, warp factor 7, Mr. Sulu. And that takes us to the end. Hey, thanks, guys. Shabbat shalom.